Hey everyone, welcome to our DevOps office hours. It is April 26, 2023. My name's Eric Osterman, and I'll be your host today. Cloud Posse is the DevOps accelerator you need. We empower companies to conquer AWS with our rock-solid Terraform blueprints. We're so confident in our results, we offer a money-back guarantee. Whether you're starting from scratch or just not happy with your current situation, why don't you head over to cloudposse.com/quiz. Again, cloudposse.com/quiz to book a session with me directly, and I'll show you what your AWS future can look like. If you're new here, don't worry. Our format's super informal. My main goal is to answer your questions. If you're curious about Cloud Posse or any of our open source tools and modules, this is also a great place to ask. For those of you joining us through our podcast or YouTube channel, we host these calls every week, so don't miss out. Register by going to cloudposse.com/office hours. Again, cloudposse.com/office hours. Our call today is recorded. We'll be posting a recording of our session today to the YouTube channel. So if you want to support what we do over here, please hit those like and subscribe buttons. It helps us out a great deal. Just go to youtube.com/cloudposse. Also, it's a great way to share these sessions with your team if you want everyone to get on the same page. So that said, got lots of announcements that came across my radar from all the different people sharing cool things with me throughout the week. One was from Matt Calhoun. He came across this Infra Copilot. I haven't dug into it. Looks like it might be based on open source here, given that it's based on this repo here. So it gives you a ChatGPT-like experience of generating an architecture, which you can then export to Terraform, CloudFormation, maybe a couple others. I didn't see what the other options were. What I thought differentiated it, what made it nice, is that it's not like storing these and deploying them for you. It actually can open up a pull request against your GitHub repository with the artifact that it creates. In principle, I love the idea. I'd like to see how it is in practice. Has anyone looked further into this project, Plotho? All right, we'll share a link to that. Next announcement is exciting. EKS has been kind of a black hole when it came to GuardDuty. I believe you could integrate it with, what's it called, CubeSec or something? Into Security Hub and get some of the findings that way. This gives you the power of GuardDuty and monitoring activity on your EKS container workloads. Another little tool that came across my LinkedIn feed was this called Krrr. It's a tool that leverages Prometheus to make right-sized recommendations for your Kubernetes pods. Provides a nice little console GUI interface like this to make it easier to figure out what those CPU limits and requests should be, memory requests and limits based on actual data in Prometheus. All right. Other one is exciting. If you are a open source project leveraging deployments for some reason, or a lucky organization using GitHub Enterprise, you can now create custom deployment protection rules to require certain things to happen. I think this was a big missing piece for deployments in GitHub and GitHub Actions. With this, those protections are basically like status checks. Just like you can have checks required to merge a pull request, now you can have checks required to run a deployment. So obvious examples would be the deployment to dev must succeed before the deployment to staging. And the deployment to staging must succeed before the deployment to production. The other things you can have are requirement that certain integration checks once a deployment to dev has completed. That could be another use case. Also, since these are ultimately just actions that run, these checks that you implement work in the entire GitHub ecosystem. So all you do is publish another GitHub action, and now it can be used across your organization or in other projects in other organizations to do this. Here's an example of kind of like you can enable them.
Like 6 months ago, I wrote a custom shared action that checks for our hotfix process that was checking for existence of hotfix branches and stopping the deployment. For the normal process, we went into like a hotfix mode. This was something I'm like, okay for that.
Yeah, I could see this tying into a hotfix process. We have one of those as well in our...
I had like a circuit breaker on the main pipeline that when a hotfix branch existed, it wouldn't allow you to deploy the main pipeline, basically.
That's actually a good edge case I didn't think about.
I wrote a shared action in like Bash like 6 months ago, and I was thinking I wish they had something like this, but...
Yeah, but I'm glad you brought that up because we have a hotfix workflow as well that we implement for customers, but I don't think we considered the race condition between that hotfix branch and deployment going out in main, and there should be a locking mechanism
there. So the way I have it is I have the main, you know, it's a trunk base, and I use like short-lived feature branches. And then if there's a hot fix, I have a second workflow, which is like a copy of the one that's on the
main,
but it looks at like hot fix star and it bypasses dev and QA, goes straight to staging. Yeah. And then the main one has a circuit breaker shared. I have a shared action that they all use that when the hot fix is there, it won't let you go past dev, but it allows people to keep working in dev while the hot fix is skipping, basically.
Yeah. That makes sense. It's almost identical the way you described it to what we do. We also have the hotfix branches, and we have a separate workflow that runs on those, and it bypasses dev and staging. The addition that we did was we also added a hotfix environment. So when you open the PR for the hotfix, you can preview the hotfix against production resources.
Yeah, I don't have preview yet. I'm on my second iteration. What I just described was at another company. I'm setting this all up again.
Okay.
Now, so yeah, I want to do the preview generator with Argo.
Okay, cool. That's what we're doing too. Yeah, if anyone's curious. A lot of our workflows are on our GitHub. So first of all, we have a GitHub actions workflows repo, which has the shared workflows that we're building and using with customers. So we follow this pattern of like CD shared workflows, CI shared workflows, and a controller, which does some business logic. And then the business logic for how we're doing hot fixes is in these controllers here. So shared workflows are special in that you cannot use them across organizations. You have to vendor them, you have to copy them. So we publish them here as part of our process of just keeping it up centrally up to date. All right. Another one, I saw this via the weekly TF newsletter, Anton's newsletter. I don't know, I got a chuckle out of it. So somebody implemented a code generator for Terraform. Now, Terraform itself is JSON, right? Or you can, Terraform, the binary, can read properly formatted JSON in place of HCL. So the next logical conclusion is, well, why aren't we using JSONet then to generate that JSON that Terraform can use? Because using CDK wasn't esoteric enough. We needed a more esoteric solution that makes us even more differentiated. So no, I'm being mean. This is a way to use JSONet. JSONet has some cool features, being just also native JSON to do it. I don't know. I would really hate to join a company that was using something this radical, even if it meets some elegance in its implementation. All right. I haven't had a chance to check this one out yet. I just saw it before the call. One of our engineers shared it. We're often taking a look at the ThoughtWork technology radar. It's nice of them to publish kind of their opinions on where they see tech going, both CNCF projects and others. Again, I haven't had a chance to see what they are recommending here. So that's maybe a premature announcement. Has anyone already taken a look at this? Anything stand out? All right. Well, I'm just curious about, let's see here, tools. Adopt, assess, hold. DVC. Never heard of DVC. All right. Next announcement, just a little one. Apparently, a bunch of users started getting errors about a day ago that Terraform will damage your computer. Apparently, there was a the key used for signing the packages must have been rotated. So if you were installing Terraform natively on a Mac, you might have gotten this error. But that was a nice clickbaity title. All right. Next announcement is another package manager for Kubernetes. Why this stands out to me is just that there's been a lot of misunderstandings by people new to Kubernetes on why we need Helm, and it's like an obtuse templating engine. Like, why are we templating YAML when it could just be generated? Aren't there better ways of doing this? And it's not fully grokked. But I argue that one of the biggest reasons for Kubernetes success is Helm, in that it makes it really easy to install architectures, and there's a hub, and you can share all these patterns. And the same thing doesn't exist for things like ECS. So I think that contributes to Kubernetes massive success. So Timoni is a alternative then, powered by QLang, to install packages similar to this. Obviously, this is in its infancy, 386 stars, under active development. But hey, someone else is thinking of another way of installing packages for Kubernetes. I like that it's using OCI as the standard way, which Helm supports now too. I wonder if they're going to solve how to install and manage operators in packages, because that is sucky still. All right. Next announcement is, I feel like we brought this up before, but I think at that point, Atlas maybe just supported HCL and it wasn't built into Terraform. So now you can use pure Terraform with database migrations defined as SQL files and use Terraform to run those migrations. So it's a centralized pipeline for doing that. Obviously, if you're using something like this with Terraform Cloud, you're going to need a Terraform Enterprise or Spacelift Enterprise with self-hosted runners, or self-hosted GitHub Action runners, something that lets you run your Terraform against private resources, because God forbid you make your databases public. All right, here's one that was shared by Vlad just before we started. I haven't had a look at it yet. So Vlad, what stood out with you on this one? I haven't been too keen on the subscription-based OSs. So, this didn't.
Native Ubuntu Pro on AWS. If you're not familiar, Ubuntu Pro is basically Ubuntu guarantees updates not only for the Linux distribution, but also for I know how many packages that are associated with that. So if you need like a long LTS OS where that also includes support for packages and backporting security fixes, this is pretty nice. It's okay. An alternative to the latest Amazon Linux 2023 was the latest one. It's nice. I like it.
All right, cool. And another one was Amazon has extended GuardDuty to also support, active scanning of lambdas. So that's a nice addition too.
Yeah, it's just network scanning from what I understand. I haven't had the time to dive deeper into this, but it's a good start either way.
Okay, gotcha. And last one was a 7-hour video from KubeCon. We're going to start rebroadcasting. So everyone get your popcorn and we'll start.
I just pasted the relevant timestamps for the roadmap in the chat. So 4 hours, 9 minutes, 33 seconds is the first one, I think. I could be wrong. The Zoom chat. Do I need to post them on Slack? Give me a second. There you go.
All right. Thanks for
posting. There might be others. I'm not up to date. I yet have to go through it and extract all of them for other secret project.
This is really funny. This literally just came up this morning. One of our customers were trying to get it to work. I guess this is why. So now they're looking at Calico.
We're not seeing YouTube if you
open it up. Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, I am not. Hold on, let me open your. I'm highlighting in the Zoom chat, so that's why no one sees. One sec.
Yeah, keeping up to date with AWS releases is complicated. I'm going to make it easier soon-ish. Eric has seen a preview.
Yeah. I was going to ask for an update when it's appropriate, but
it should launch in early May.
Okay. So yeah, this one here, the VPC CNI network policy support. This is for Kubernetes. As our customer found out, I guess network policies aren't supported right now. So this is forthcoming. It was announced.
Yeah, if you actually open up the video and go to the timestamp, they have more details. It's been a while since I've seen this, and I did a lot of Kubernetes since then. If I remember correctly, and there is a very high chance I'm wrong, this is going to be eBPF based. Okay. I could be wrong, but yeah, you're not going to have to use Calico to get network policy support in Kubernetes anymore.
Yeah.
In EKS, you can just use the soon to be updated VPC CNI, I assume. Again, I haven't dived deep into this. I could be wrong. The second one is cluster access management, which is basically improvements to getting rid of AWS auth config map, which nobody enjoys very much. IAMWall for service accounts v2, but I honestly don't remember that. I'm sorry, you're going to have to open the video. I don't remember. Cluster updates is AWS is going to make EKS cluster updates a lot easier and faster. And the last one is Carpenter would be natively integrated into EKS somehow. It's been a while since I've seen this, and I also know a lot of NDA details, and I don't want to leak anything. I'm not sure exactly what was communicated or not. But yeah, the YouTube video is there. It's the whole event AWS had co-located at KubeCon Europe. It's a 7-hour video. There is a keynote from the new Kubernetes, new EKS GM, which was previously the CTO of DigitalOcean, if I remember correctly. I recommend you watch that. And then there's in the afternoon a keynote from the PM, Nathan Tabor, who is going through this roadmap and going into more details. Both of those are super, super awesome. If you have the time, I would also watch the rest of the talks. There are talks on stuff like GitOps, securing stuff, running Kubernetes. They were pretty nice. I highly recommend you watch the whole 7-hour thing.
Very cool. I was going to ask, when you said, regarding Carpenter, what were you saying there?
It's going to get integrated with EKS. If you open the video and go to that, I genuinely don't know what has been shared about that, but basically, like, you're just going to get nodes and think of it maybe kind of ish. Hold on, I can open the video. Why am I stressing? Give me a sec. Like, I have four monitors here. Why did I should have thought of this. Like, it's fine. Now
that sounds really rad. I know someone on this call who would really like that.
So 4 hours, 23 minutes, and whatever in the video, if YouTube would load, Carpenter selects the most optimal nodes, la-di-da-di-da. Roadmap, management in EKS API / console. Configure clusters with automatic no-touch compute from the start using EKS API's console CLI. So you know how when you create a cluster, it's really annoying because you don't have the nodes and all the add-ons don't have anywhere to start, so it fails. I assume this is going to integrate it. Again, they go into way more detail in the video and they actually know what they're talking about. Unlike me, who is remembering stuff that I saw a week ago and my memory is very mush and I am a drinker and don't believe me. Like, watch the video.
All right. Well, there you got it. Straight from the alcoholic's mouth. No, I'm joking. any other announcements we can cover today? No other announcements? All right.
Yeah.
AWS announced layoffs today.
Ooh, I saw that. Even in the cloud division. Yeah, HR and cloud. This is interesting.
Yeah, and Influx Data releases Influx Data 3.0 for their time series. So I'm just looking at how this is going to comp, if it's going to be better than Amazon Time Stream right now. It's very new. I've not tried it. I don't know if anyone has tried it out yet.
Well, the only place I'm running Influx right now is on my Raspberry Pi with Home Assistant. But all right. Thanks for that announcement. And let's see here. Jonathan was posting in the chat, our experiences with Kubernetes on GCP suggest Google's Carpenter alike already pretty well integrated into GKE. Yeah, so that's what EKS has to compete against is GKE, which is a much more pleasant experience. So I think if they did this for EKS, EKS is going to be a lot more on par with GKE. And then combined with the large add-on ecosystem for EKS, and then the automatic node provisioning, it'll feel a lot more magical when you can just say, I want these add-ons, nodes are automatically provisioned, and all of that can be defined as one cluster, and you don't need all this other infrastructure to support it. And I guess that also is in line with what, if they do this, then this should be a whole lot easier because then Carpenter is basically responsible for node pool updates and the whole solution becomes fully managed. Obviously, it's not going to magically update your manifests. And if you're using deprecated APIs, I'm guessing it's going to abort, hopefully. But I'm sure somebody's going to release a Lambda apparatus that will fix that for you. All right, Q&A then. That's all I got in terms of announcements.
Oh, Google's data centers got flooded in Paris, I think, France, something. That was fun to see. And it also highlights how different cloud providers define what a region is. Like, AWS guarantees that there is AZs are separate buildings that are separated by I don't know how many kilometers or whatever. Google and Microsoft don't guarantee that. And from what folks were sharing on Twitter, apparently zones in smaller regions are just separate buildings in the same facility. So that's fine.
Look at the status page. I didn't know that's why. I see it in the Google Cloud console that there's a huge outage in Paris. I did not. And everything is down, right? So I had no idea that it was actually because of the flood.
Oops.
Yeah, not the thing you like to see. It's not just degraded, it's just X. Dead. Wow. But hey, if you're using the private service connect, you're in luck. All right. Well, Q&A. Any questions that we can get answered today? This was an old one from last. I'll delete that. Any recommendations on dependency managers like SneakWiz, DeepFence?
Yeah, if anyone has any experience in these, we're just going to be jumping into evaluating a number of them and trying to figure out how to clean up our dependency management. So any experience would be appreciated.
I mean, and these tools do a whole lot more than that. Are you looking at using them only for that? Are they licensed that way? Or do you get all the other benefits as well?
Well, some of them, I see all sorts of acronym like cloud security posture management. And a lot of those seem to be scanners of your cloud configurations, basically your current allocations, current configurations. They try to do what Alert Logic or Guard Duty or any of the scanners will do is to figure out what better settings are. I'm particularly interested in ones that focus on the code bases that we put in place and the kind of dependencies and sub-dependencies of code bases, because we don't really have, and we have this very nice clean new architecture, it's terraformed and everything, good security policies and so on, but the code that we place could use some dependency cleanup. So that's kind of where I'm focused right now.
Someone else suggested Prisma Cloud, which includes like Bridge Crew, among other things.
Prisma Cloud, I'll have to look at those.
If you guys have the money to spend on Prisma Cloud, their feature set is quite extensive and awesome, especially if you don't necessarily have introspection to, like, say you weren't actually the person who built the application. Plugs into everything, and you get a breakdown of all the dependencies, like the different layers of the containers that you're building, you know, which ones have vulnerabilities, and then actually, you know, the static analysis as well of your applications.
I'll have to look at that. We do use Checkout from, which I think is also, is it Bridge Crew? Is that now owned by Palo Alto Networks?
Yeah.
So that's pretty interesting, but they basically wanted to charge us, I don't know what it was, $25K a year to use the same thing that the open source tools are doing for us for free. It wasn't the best sales call I've ever taken. But if there's better stuff in the commercial license, I'll have to look at that.
And Alex brings up a good point that if you buy it through, you can buy it through the AWS marketplace, pay as you go, which also means if you have an EDP, this can go against your spend and consolidate your bill.
That's two recommendations. That's actually very good. That's naming the same thing as being good.
At KubeCon, I guess in Detroit, I talked to somebody at Prisma Cloud. I wondered what it would cost, you know, and they obviously didn't tell me upfront, but they mentioned if you really want to try it out, just ask them for a proof of value and then ask them for another month. and then ask them for another month. And depending on how big your company is, you know, they want to sell the product to you, right? So. Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. All right. Next question is from Abdul. When would you choose deploying front-end apps on something like AWS S3 over containers in Kubernetes? Well, just a point of clarification. You might deploy those apps to S3, but I wouldn't host them publicly on S3. Those should be fronted with something like CloudFront. And then there's like an alternative, which would be Amplify. And that sets up kind of a framework of doing that all together for you in an automated fashion. So when would you choose deploying front-end apps on something like a statically hosted platform versus Kubernetes? I would say pretty much anytime you can. Amplify hosting, okay. You'll have to even clarify that one for me, I guess. Vlad, I didn't know that.
So Amplify is the mean way to say that is going to explain it very quickly is AWS is incapable of building libraries for folks to actually use their services. They only have shitty low-level SDKs. So Amplify is their attempt at doing that. Right. They were historically terrible, like very rigid, very hard to extend, very hard to migrate off them. They have improved, but they're still not fabulous. And a lot of folk had not really good experiences with Amplify libraries. Again, they're improving. I don't believe they're there, but they are improving a lot. Amplify hosting.
Yeah, okay.
Is a product that basically gives you S3 plus CloudFront. It's Netlify, but worse a bit, like classic AWS, not ideal user experience. But it does deployments for you. It's S3 plus CloudFront plus WAF plus whatever. You don't see the resources. It's not super flexible, but it's a really, really good starting point, and it checks off a lot of boxes. Like my website is running on Amplify hosting, and I haven't had any issues. So if you don't want to do S3 plus CloudFront plus CloudFront functions or Lambda at Edge plus WAF plus whatever it is, you can just do Amplify hosting. And it's a really good starting point.
All right. Well, thank you for clarifying that. Last week we announced we actually added our Terraform module for Amplify, but it shows how much I personally know about it. back to your point though, Abdul, I think that there are a few considerations, right? I hate to give a blanket statement for every use case. I would say kind of like industry best practices these days would be, you know, deploy your static sites on something like an object store like S3 fronted by a CDN like CloudFront or something similar. And that's going to give you infinite scale for your blog, which gets 10 visitors, you know, a day or something, where you might not need it. But the other thing is it's very low maintenance, right? So if you can get away with it, it costs you almost nothing to host even small sites like this and very maintenance free plus the scale. Now, let's say that you already had to run Kubernetes for some reason or had to run ECS. And let's say you already had all the workflows your organization needs to deploy to that platform. Are you going to get, you know, better economies of scale, better productivity by having lots of disparate systems responsible for hosting your apps just because you have to follow industry best practices? You know, I think there's an argument to be made that use whatever platform you already have if that's going to be the shortest path, plus it'll fit in with all your other telemetry and monitoring and so forth.
One more thing to mention, please don't make your users hate you by forcing them to go to US East 1 for every single website. Like a big deal with CDNs is that websites are faster because they do caching. If you force every user to go to your container in US East 1 or whatever, there's going to be a lot more latency, a lot more places where traffic can go wrong, a lot more places where issues can creep up. So user experience also matters a lot. And I shared my answer in the chat, like basically CloudFront containers if you need the server-side rendering or things like that. If you can just do a static website, that's awesome. And it's way simpler.
All right, awesome. So then I think we, Abdul says thanks on that. Any other questions? Looks like I don't see any more in the chat.
Anyone at RSAConf this week? And are there any AWS findings from this conference? Sounds like a no.
Yep, resounding no. Vlad's asking, anybody running IPv6 only Kubernetes clusters? We've only done it.
We weren't brave enough.
Yeah. We've only done it one time for an IoT company. And for that, it really made sense. But otherwise, we haven't been deploying it largely because of the cognitive overhead or fear of IPv6 not being experts at it.
Makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah. Also, on that though, like we internally had this conversation has come up a lot. We have a proponent internally that says we should be making this our default recommendation. And I've been pushing back against that. The reason for us is helps to understand would be when planning out a organization and its network architecture on IPv4 and factoring in, you know, all the regions and all the accounts and the ability to have a transit gateway that would connect all of those. And that is a real pain to do and easy to get wrong, as we have found out with customers. And when you get it wrong, you might have to do some serious re-networking as part of that. Now with Lattice, our use case for why we wanted to move to IPv6, I think is now mitigated, at least within an AWS world, because now we can have overlapping VPCs in every account. We don't have to worry about connecting everything to a transit gateway. And now one would be able to expose on an overlay network those services and not, you know, and it'd be an afterthought. Obviously, this is brand new and it just went GA like 2 weeks ago, and Terraform support is forthcoming. And obviously, we have not deployed this anywhere. This is just where my head is at and what I'm rooting for as the alternative to EKS IPv6.
For the record, EKS doesn't support IPv6 only clusters. It only supports dual stack. So IPv4 plus IPv6. The node gets an IPv4 address and each pod gets IPv6, which is awesome. And you basically eliminate all the running out of IP addresses for pods concern. But you don't eliminate the NAT gateway, which is still a thing.
Good to know.
It's actually super cool because you never really need to address pods directly anyway. So interesting.
All right. Let's see here. What is someone else post here? Let's see here. Anyone use TwinGate for zero trust network access? I have not heard personally of TwinGate, so I'd like to learn more about that. There's so many of these zero trust solutions. Oh, TwinGate is by Perimeter 81. Then I am familiar.
Oh, no. I think they're a competitor to Perimeter 81. Like you said, they are...
Oh, yes.
There's lots of these. I think the most popular or loved one by techies seems to be Tailscale in this case. But I was just curious if anyone has used TwinGate. Someone says you should stay away.
All right. Someone says super unstable. Interesting. All right. Thanks for sharing your experience. Tailscale comes up all the time. We used to get a lot of requests for Zscaler and StrongDM, but not as much anymore.
I've got another question. How do you handle just-in-time permission access? Is anyone on a team where they have that? Like someone can request from a portal or maybe from a chatbot in Slack or anything like that?
I love that you asked this question. We just discussed it in our review board internally at Cloud Posse as an aspirational goal. We don't have any answer for this, so I'm curious about it as well. Basically, this idea where you request temporary permissions to elevate your permissions in some environment for some period of time. Is there something that does that for like AWS? Oh, interesting. So Teleport has the just-in-time requests. I didn't know that, Michael. We were just talking to somebody that had met with Teleport and they wanted that just-in-time thing, but they told me that it didn't support it. So I don't know what, I don't know what's what then, if the Teleport supports just-in-time.
Teleport's got a whole just-in-time access request subsystem. Now, we aren't talking enhancing access in AWS. The Teleport is limited to a certain number of resource types protocols, right? So it's mostly SSH. You have any kind of web app, but that doesn't mean it's going to integrate with AWS Management Console.
Right.
And then, so of course, you've got a bunch of databases and
web apps, Kubernetes.
Kubernetes. Yeah. And they also have a Windows desktop now. It's not RDP, right? It's their own sort of spin on all of that. There's some really, really nice, they just went with headless SSO. Used to be, if you have an SSO integration, you know, you would be directed to Okta or wherever. And that wouldn't always work in a pass-through shell, like if you're logged into something else and you're everything you do with Teleport is, you know, command line. They have a web interface that you can do everything through point and click, but for your users that need that. But you know, they have support for security keys, hardware right there in the console. So you're basically like SSHing, you know, and you can use YubiKeys or whatever. So yeah, the just-in-time stuff works really well. And it also ties into stuff like Slack and other messaging for approvals if you want to go that direction. Whether you're doing like peer approval for access to that database or Kubernetes cluster or SSH or whatever it is, you know, whether you're requesting temporary access to any of those protocols, you can set it up to do like a peer approval or a hierarchy approval. And between that and their clustering, they call it a trusted root, you can set up hierarchical Teleport clusters, which has some really useful implications if you're working in a team or in a multiple organizations. So yeah, very specific use cases and doesn't solve the AWS just in time.
I see. I'm mainly looking for AWS, but I will look into this. I also wonder what their pricing is like, because I did do some research and I found two options, but the pricing for those are quite expensive. I found a strong DM, and then I found something called SimOps. Just a side question.
Yeah, we looked at both. Yep.
Okay. What was your experience?
StrongDM would not do the things we needed it to do. And fortunately, their salespeople were right up front when we started describing the use cases. Their architecture just didn't work that way. The licensing wasn't advantageous for us. So Teleport was advantageous for us because we could set up as many clusters as we wanted. dev, prod, stage, you know, tiered clusters. They don't care. Your licensing is on the protocol per user per month, which if you basically get everything, and don't take this as any kind of, you know, formal stuff, but you can estimate, obviously I'm a representative of Teleport. I can't offer you quotes, but you can estimate if you want all the protocols, right? It runs somewhere in the neighborhood of, if you want all the protocols, right? You want to do Windows, you want to do databases, you want to do web apps, you want to do SSH. It runs around $50 a user a month. But if you can drop some of those, drop databases, drop Kubernetes, drop from some of your users, then you can make it be $25 a user a month. You know, even at relatively small scales. And I'm sure if you scale up, you'll get better pricing. But, you know, and that's run your own cluster, run as many clusters as you want, you know, run them in lots of places if that's what you need. If you're not going to scale on users, if you're going to scale on endpoints and you're going to scale on clusters, then their licensing is advantageous over others. But you look at StrongDM, if you're scaling on users, or there's some other ones, I don't remember exactly which ones, do you really have to decide what you're scaling on? If you've got 15,000 users, then Teleport, maybe they have a plan for you. We didn't come to them at that
point. Sounds good. How is the IAC support? Like the terror?
Excellent, yeah.
Okay.
We're very pleased with it. Yeah, thanks. We do everything 100% IAC with Teleport. Managing the roles, all the users are tied to SSO. So yeah, 100%.
And there's also a Teleport operator for Kubernetes, which is the direction they're starting to push people in. It's technically, I think, in beta, but they say it's better than that. All right. Vlad shared another link to this solution called Hermetic, a play on words with hermetic, for just-in-time AWS access.
For the record, never used them, don't know anything about them. They were a quick result when I was looking for this. So I don't
know. Yeah. This is kind of like what I'd like to see, this a dashboard like that. It makes it easy to approve and deploy. Cool. All right, let's see what other questions we got here. Got about 10 more minutes. Someone asks, have you ever run out of IPv4 address space for your EKS clusters? Yes. Jonathan, you want to talk about that one?
So where we get into this, the first time that we scheduled everything, we were, we basically didn't know how to allocate. We didn't know what would be suitable. And I think we also, there were so many variables in play that we didn't make good choices about how many individual networks we would need, how they would be arranged, that sort of thing. We took a guess. It turned out to be wrong. We had to fall back and redesign because our address space for individual cluster segments was much too small. And so second pass is beautiful. It's been, we have lots of space, but we definitely designed ourselves into a painted corner the first time that we went into this. And if we had overlay networks or if we had IPv6 or something that would kind of reduce the stress on it, I think that would have been brilliant.
I think the biggest misunderstanding with EKS is the number of addresses you need is not one-to-one with the number of pods. Because for performance reasons, presumably, they allocate like four or five addresses for every one pod you're launching. And that eats up the space much more quickly than you would expect.
You can configure that. And yeah, it's for performance reasons. Like you really don't want to be like, hey, I want to pod. And then AWS will go,
Okay, so first of all, you're going to get the networking interface and we're going to connect it and activate it and stuff like that. That would be horrible. But the VPC CNI has a documentation page that talks in detail about the environment variables that you need to change. You can basically fine tune depending on your workloads, because on an 8x large instance, some folks will run two pods, others will run 30. And based on that, there are a couple of environment variables that you can configure so you only allocate however many IPs you actually need. But you need to know your workloads really, really well to do that.
Good to know.
Interesting, interesting.
I ran out of a lot of IPs in my life.
Okay, let's see, more questions.
What is the IDP you use most frequently for your customers?
Definitely for us, but you know, there's something to be true. It self-selects based on what we publish the most, our documentation and copy and so forth. But yeah, it's the two you would maybe guess. It's going to be Okta and Google Workspaces. Okta is the go-to for most enterprises or enterprise scale startups that we work with. And then everyone starts off on Google Workspaces. For us, since we don't do anything with Azure, we see almost zero customers on that. Maybe one or two use Azure AD or something. We've done one jump cloud. And that seems like it.
SOC 2 compliance. Have you guys done it?
So we help on the technical side and we can implement the controls. We deploy Security Hub, Guard Duty, Inspector, help remediate the findings from those. But SOC 2 isn't a technical framework and you usually select some technical benchmark to achieve it. So you might pick CIS or combine it with CIS and HITRUST and AWS Well Architected. And then that's what you have to be conformant with.
I will also say we just our SOC 2 Type 2 is being announced this afternoon. Many of the Cloud Posse designs helped us to get that enormously. There isn't a one-to-one mapping of any of this EKS or AWS or whatever stuff to SOC 2. It is all a big overlay, but it is very possible with the Cloud Posse design to get a SOC 2, and we had a lot of success doing that.
Woo! Glad to hear that, John.
Yes, and now I can go do.